Hello, it's August 2nd, 2023. 1900 hours Eastern Daylight Time. That's a pretty exact time. Totally without planning. Ward Green with you again, little children. From Carl Jung, we have the quote, "For better to come, good must stand aside." Very, very astute observation. Lao Tzu, the Chinese philosopher, said, "Do not seek, otherwise you will lose. Do not seek, and you will find." A very interesting thought. And Mark Twain, "The fear of death follows from the fear of life. A man who lives fully is prepared to die at any time." I happen to agree with that. When we are healthy, we tend to be able to live more fully also. But even then, many of us don't always realize that goal of living fully, and we don't necessarily achieve that in our day-to-day life, although it is a great thing when we do it. I can say that I feel like I've experienced that in my life. The song for today is written by Roger Miller. This recording was from 1967 by Petula Clark. This is the one that I heard on the radio when I was young, about 10 years old. Let me see if they have a release time. No, they don't have the release date in the month for her. This reached number one for Roger Miller in 1965 and 66 on the U.S. Billboard Hot Adult Contemporary Tracks chart. But that's all we have as far as charts, and I mean, we don't have anything for Petula. So this is "England Swings" by Petula Clark, her vocal rendition, and her cover of this song by Roger Miller from 1967. That was a big hit when I was in grade 5. I was 10 years old. I believe that was when that was. I skipped grade 4. I went from grade 3 to grade 5. And in grade 5, I fell in love for the first time at the age of 10 years old. And I believe that's the right age, but I'll think about it later. Yeah. Unfortunately, we didn't know the Bible principles, and we didn't know how to keep a relationship or even start a relationship. We didn't know anything about, I mean, neither me nor the young lady knew anything about that, so there was no real possibility, I think, for that to lead anywhere at the time. At some point, I changed my mind about the way I felt about that young person, and in a way it's sad because your first love is always so intense and so, you know, unexpected, or you know, it's so unique, it's so poignant is the word, I think. It's very, very special. Now, from the Born Again article, chapter 3, paragraph 8, little ones, the traditional date of death for King Herod is BCE 4. That's 4 years before the Common Era. Called Herod the Great. Now, of course, if we went 4 years from 4 BCE forward, we'd get to 1 CE. We wouldn't get to zero, because there's no 0 year. Now, King Herod, called Herod the Great, his death dated April of that year, BCE 4, could not logically have preceded his own command to slaughter the young boys. He'd have to be alive to do that, to give the command. And there appears to be an excellent correspondence between the birth of Jesus in late BCE 6 as the birth of Jesus and Herod's death 2 years later. There were wise men from the east who saw a quote-unquote star at about the time of Jesus' birth and came to Jerusalem. From Matthew 1:7-12, the gruesome order given by Herod to kill all boys in Bethlehem from 2 years of age and under is influenced by the information he gets from the astrologers or wise men, and so is influenced by the time it took them to travel to Jerusalem also. Based on these circumstances, it doesn't appear that a birth date for Jesus after late BCE 6 is probable, nor that Herod can have died any sooner than April BCE 4. If these are the true dates for these events, there is not the least bit of room for variation, but they have taken place in such a way as to offer high provenance. The death of Herod in BCE 4, as is widely held, offers to make the birth date of Jesus earlier than BCE 5, so that the crucifixion is not later than 34 years later, including Jesus' 3.5-year ministry, which now clearly doesn't support a crucifixion after 30 CE. The 30 CE crucifixion year is thus reinforced by Herod having died in April of BCE 4, an accurate provenance. We may now examine the birth date of Jesus, late BCE 6. And here we have, in the footnote number 1, some quotes from Josephus' Antiquities. The first one from Book 15, I suppose it is, and chapter 16, but from 15, chapter 16, section 4, the conquest of Jerusalem in BCE 37 is here described, and the death of Antigonus, arranged by Herod at that time by bribing Antony. That was in square brackets, so that was added by me. Antiquities 17, chapter 6, section 4, last sentence by Josephus, in square brackets, an eclipse of the moon is mentioned by Josephus here, and according to his translator, Mr. William Whiston, it is the only eclipse of either of the luminaries that is mentioned by Josephus in any of his writings. That is, the sun and the moon are the luminaries. It was identified by Mr. Whiston as the lunar eclipse of March 13th, BCE4, and has been also widely accepted as such. End square bracket. Now, Antiquities 17, chapter 8, section 1 by Josephus, in square brackets, Herod dies in BCE 4 as confirmed by the eclipse of March 13th in chapter 6 above, and it is given as being 34 years after Herod procured the death of Antigonus in BCE 37, which comes to BCE 4 in brackets, round brackets, with years counted inclusively. End round bracket, end square bracket. And that's the end of the footnote number one. So, some very interesting information there. It shows that Josephus gives information with regard to the dating that is very consistent with the death of Herod in BCE 4. Our proverb for today, little children, is from Proverbs 22 and 11. The one loving purity of heart, for the charm of his lips, the king will be his companion. By the way, that song, we heard it quite a lot in Deep River, where I was living at the age of 10. So it must have been a big hit. And that was I believe Petula Clark is a British woman, if I'm not mistaken, but the song was written by an American, Roger Miller. And we never knew that Roger Miller wrote it, because we only heard Petula Clark singing it. Her song, her version was the hit. Roger Miller's was not a hit. Well, it was a number one hit, but I don't remember hearing it. Maybe we did hear it, but I don't remember that version. It was the hit that was number one on the chart in the U.S., but not in Canada, of course. It's number nine on the Chum chart in Canada. That was Roger Miller's version. So yeah, but when I compare the two, I may well have heard Roger Miller's version, but I don't really prefer it. I prefer Petula's version, actually. Now, Numbers 33 is where we're reading right now in our study from Numbers. And this is a very interesting chapter, or at least a very important chapter, because it gives all these stops and camps, all the campsites for the Israelites on their journey over the 40 years from when they left Egypt until when they arrived at the Promised Land on the east side of the Jordan opposite Jericho. So let's read. These were the stages of the sons of Israel who went out of the land of Egypt in their armies by the hand of Moses and Aaron. And Moses kept recording the departure places by their stages at the order of Jehovah. And these were their stages from one departure place to another. And they proceeded to pull away from Ramesses in the first month on the 15th day of the first month. Directly the day after the Passover, the sons of Israel went out with uplifted hand before the eyes of all the Egyptians. And that date in the genealogy is May 3rd, 1493 BCE. And here it says it's the day after the Passover. All the while, the Egyptians were burying those whom Jehovah had struck among them. That is, all the firstborn, and upon their gods Jehovah had executed judgments. So the sons of Israel pulled away from Ramesses and went camping in Succoth. Then they pulled away from Succoth and went camping in Etham, which is on the edge of the wilderness. Sounds like they're getting into the place where they would be going north towards the Promised Land. Next, they pulled away from Etham and turned back toward Pi-Hahiroth, which is in view of Baal-Zephon, and they went camping before Migdol. After that, they pulled away from Pi-Hahiroth and went passing through the midst of the sea to the wilderness and kept marching a three-day journey in the wilderness of Etham and took up camping at Mera. Oh, the wilderness of Etham. There we go. Well, we know where Mera is, or we do think we do. It's on the east coast of the Red Sea, the western arm of the Red Sea. So they marched a three-day journey without stopping, and then they took up camping at Mera. So that's interesting, isn't it? Everything has to be considered and reconsidered when we're studying such important matters and trying to determine exactly what was going on and what actually did take place, and even to just try and see whether it makes sense as accurate history, which we believe it is, but we need to try and verify. Then they pulled away from Mera and came to Elim. Now we know Elim is where they, it's, let's just say, let's just read. Now in Elim there were 12 springs of water and 70 palm trees. We don't know if today there would be 70 palm trees there still. So they camped there. At the time, it says there were 70 palm trees. Next, they pulled away from Elim and went camping by the Red Sea. So this is just moving south along the east coast of the western arm of the Red Sea, the northern tip of which is the place where Suez is located. So the Red Sea camping, they'd be camping on the east coast of the western arm of the Red Sea, south of Elim. After that, they pulled away from the Red Sea and took up camping in the wilderness of Sin. Let me get the map. I produced a map that should work for what we want, and now I don't know where it is, but we need to find it. Where did I put it? I'm trying to remember. Maybe it's here. Yeah, I may have put it, actually. I probably did try to prepare it and put it in place so that we'd have it. Maybe this might be it. Here, is it? What's here? Yeah, this is it. Good. It's trying to load it. So maybe we should try to reload. There it is. It's loading slowly because it's a large file. So this is the map. On the left of the map, you see the western arm of the Red Sea right here. So initially, we see Ayin Musa right there to the left of the cursor. We have Ayin Musa, the second name down from the top one there. That's very close to, well, you can't see the cursor very well, but there it is. I'm using an enlarged cursor in my OS. So right near that cursor there, when we enlarge those two names, the one below is Ayin Musa. And then we have reason to believe that's where they crossed. And then they came to Mera 3 days later down here somewhere. Right? And then we're looking for Elim somewhere after that. But Ras Elim is right here. That's where Elim is. Yeah. So have we found it? Let me see what. I've lost track of it. I saw it. I did see it. Where is it? Yeah, there it is. Ras Elim right here. If I'm not mistaken. Ras Elim. Yes. That's where we think Elim was, or close to there, and that's why it's called Zelim, or Zelima, because it's named after Elim. That's what it looks like. So, or it's some name in a different language that's similar to the name Elim, but that's why it's called that. It's because it's Elim. So there we have Mera. You know, Mera would be somewhere here. Ayin Musa is here, and then Mera is somewhere down in here. 3 days, and then maybe one more day to get to Ras Elim. We don't know how many days, but this is Ras Elim. And then they camped on the Red Sea coast somewhere over here, which it looks like there's a beach there. It looks like quite a lot of beach there, all the way here, this light-colored region here, right along the coast. Beach. It looks like right in here, actually, to the west of all these what look like mountains. And then, well, I mean, we know there's a place called Merca on this map, which I'm looking for right now. And Merca was a place. Now what's this here? Hang on a second. All right, I don't know if we can zoom in. Can we? There we go. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. So in this region, this will load. This map's available from it's an old map, but it's available from photos. Let me see now. Let's go to the, oops. Photos. I want to find the date. It looks like June. I can't read it. I mean, I don't know. I don't understand what the symbols mean. I thought that a percent 20, oh, percent 20 and then 20, it's June 28th, yeah, percent 20, I thought there was a percent on both sides of the number, but no, there never is. So June 28th is when it's from, so you can look back there and find this map. I uploaded it. I may not have uploaded this version of it, but it might, maybe I should, or maybe I did, actually. And maybe I didn't upload it on that date. I will now, after this. So this map will be available on the June 28th folder of the releases for that date. And we have, let's take a look at what we have here. See, at the bottom here, we're at the end of the red. We're at the end of the branch. So it's the Jebel Serbal. Mount Serbal is somewhere here, and Jebel Musa is in here too somewhere. It must be. It is. I know it is, but I can't read it right now. It's not as visible on this map, it seems. When we look at it like this, it doesn't seem as visible. See if we can find Mount Catherine. There's Mount Catherine. So it's just, yeah, there it is, Jebel Musa right there, just north of the Jebel Catherine, where the monastery is. So Musa is right there. So that means Serbal is just to the west over here somewhere. There it is, Serbal. It's hard to read. Serbal is right there, Jebel Serbal. Right where my cursor is right here. So it's in these dark areas where the mountains are. So then they eventually arrived at Rephidim, which is near there, Serbal. So, but they went from, now there's a place called Merca. See if we can find it. There's Wadi Merca. It's not too far north. And then we have Wadi Mukateb. Wadi, that's the place of the inscriptions. Wadi Mukateb. And then there's a place where a graveyard is, which is Serbat El Kadim. That's, I believe, where the graveyard is, one of the graveyards anyway. And some people think that's Kibroth Hateava, but we established that Kibroth Hateava was possibly, or as we thought, it was near Hazeroth, which is further over here. On this map, it's right about here, Hazeroth, right there. And so Kibroth Hateava is somewhere over here. But there were two occasions on which the Israelites suffered scourges which necessitated burials of many, many of them. So it doesn't seem like the second one is any more likely to be at Sirbat El Kadim here as much as it is over near Hazeroth, but they travel back through, it looks like, through Wadi Mokattab to get to Sirbat El Kadim. And that's Wadi Mokattab right there. Wadi Mokattab. This wadi right there. So we can see how they went along the sea, right? There's Ras Salima. From there they went, I believe, somewhere more inland to the wilderness of Zin. We're going to see, we're going to read it. Okay, they came to Elam, and then they came to by the Red Sea. Then they pulled away from the Red Sea and took up camping in the wilderness of Zin. That's the place where they went inland. It's a wilderness. Then they pulled away from the wilderness of Zin and went camping at Dophka. Later they pulled away from Dophka and went camping at Alish. They next pulled away from Alish and went camping in Rephidim. And there proved to be no water. Now Rephidim is near Mount Serbal, is what we're believing here. And there proved to be no water there for the people to drink. After that they pulled away from Rephidim and went camping in the wilderness of Sinai, somewhere else in the Sinai Peninsula. Subsequently they pulled away from the wilderness of Sinai and went camping in Kibroth Hateava. That's the place where they went just before Hazeroth. Then they pulled away from Kibroth Hateava and went camping in Hazeroth. After that, they pulled away from Hazeroth and went camping in Rithma. That's Kadesh. Next, they pulled away from Rithma and took up camping in Rimon Perez. Then they pulled away from Rimon Perez and went camping in Libna. Later, they pulled away from Libna and went camping in Rissa. Next, they pulled away from Rissa and went camping in Kehelahath. Then they pulled away from Kehelahath and went camping in Mount Shefer. Now that is in the land of over near the east, the north of the eastern arm of the Red Sea, and it's in the land of Edom or in the land of Midian in that vicinity. After that they pulled away from Mount Shefer and went camping in Hareda. Then they pulled away from Hareda and went camping in Machiloth. Next, they pulled away from Machiloth and went camping in Tehath. After that, they pulled away from Tehath and went camping in Tira. Then they pulled away from Tira and went camping in Mithka. Later, they pulled away from Mithka and went camping in Hashmona. Next, they pulled away from Hashmona and went camping in Mosiroth. Then they pulled away from Mosiroth and went camping in Benajayakan. After that, they pulled away from Benajayakan and went camping in Hor HaGidgad. Next, they pulled away from Hor HaGidgad and went camping in Jotbatha. Later, they pulled away from Jotbatha and went camping in Abrona. Then they pulled away from Abrona and went camping in Ezion-Geber. Now, Ezion-Geber is right at the northern tip of the eastern arm of the Red Sea. After that, they pulled away from Ezion-Geber and went camping in the wilderness of Zin. That is to say, Kadesh. So they came back to Kadesh. Later, they pulled away from Kadesh and went camping in Mount Hor on the frontier of the land of Edom. And Aaron the priest proceeded to go up into Mount Hor at the order of Jehovah and to die there in the 40th year of the going out of the sons of Israel from the land of Egypt. So they had gone back to Kadesh after 38 years of having been there once to spy out the land in the second year. And then they were soon after that in the 40th year. They proceeded to go up into Mount Hor, and in the fifth month on the first of the month, and Aaron was 123 years old at his death on Mount Hor. Now the Canaanite, the king of Arad, as he was dwelling in the Negev, in the land of Canaan, got to hear about the coming of the sons of Israel. In time they pulled away from Mount Hor and went camping in Zalmona. After that they pulled away from Zalmona and went camping in Punon. Next they pulled away from Punon and went camping in Oboth. Then they pulled away from Oboth and went camping in Ayi Abarim, on the border of Moab. Later they pulled away from Ayim and went camping in Dibon Gad. After that they pulled away from Dibon Gad and went camping in Almon Diblathaim. Then they pulled away from Almon Diblathaim and went camping in the mountains of Abarim before Nebo. Finally they pulled away from the mountains of Abarim and took up camping on the desert plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho. Finally they've reached the desert plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho. And they continued camping by the Jordan from Beth Jeshimoth to Abel Shittim on the desert plains of Moab. And Jehovah proceeded to speak to Moses on the desert plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho, saying, "Speak to the sons of Israel, and you must say to them, you are crossing the Jordan into the land of Canaan, and you must drive away all the inhabitants of the land from before you, and destroy all their stone figures, and all their images of molten metal you should destroy, and all their sacred high places you should annihilate. And you must take possession of the land and dwell in it, because to you I shall certainly give the land to take possession of it. And you must apportion the land to yourselves as a possession by lot according to your families. To the populous one you should increase his inheritance, and to the sparse one you should reduce his inheritance. To where the lot will come out for him, there it will become his. By the tribes of your fathers you should provide yourselves with landed property. If, though you will not drive the inhabitants of the land away from before you, then those whom you leave of them will certainly become as pricks in your eyes and as thorns in your sides, and they will indeed harass you on the land in which you will be dwelling. And it must occur that just as I had figured doing to them, I shall do to you." So the reason why they were commanded to drive away the inhabitants is because if they didn't drive them away, the inhabitants would turn against them and become very annoying and would harass them, and that was something Jehovah knew. The Israelites didn't know it, but Jehovah knew that, and that would be the end of the Israelites because they would be destroyed. Now when Jehovah says he would destroy the Israelites, I mean, he doesn't have to do it himself. The inhabitants of the land could do it. But that would be just like Jehovah acting, because he told them to drive those people away. So if they didn't do it, that would be Jehovah acting by allowing those people to annihilate the Israelites. That's the end of our study in Numbers for today. Little ones, we have now 1 Corinthians 13, which is short and very sweet. Oh, our study's done. Oh my goodness. Our study's done for today. I love you. It's August 2nd, 2023. This is Ward Green. And on my behalf, it's Crow and Star saying bye for now.